And we're joined right now by with Greg Herrick and by telephone. And Greg is he's the president of the Aviation Foundation of America. He also has his private Golden Wings Flying Museum down in Blaine. But what caught our eye really was that he is the owner of a 1954 Aero Car. And thanks to the Minneapolis Tribune, I got to see that article and a photograph of the funkiest looking airplane I've ever seen. Greg, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, it's my pleasure.
It just amazed me as I saw that little car. And I got to agree with Minneapolis paper, was like the Jetsons just came back to my life. Can you describe
that?
Well,
that's right. That's what a lot of people think of. You know, in fact, growing up, I used to watch the Flintstones and the Jetsons and all of that. And, you know, it kind of pulled at my heartstrings, too, when I saw that the airplane was available a long time ago and was able to acquire it.
Now, can you describe that to folks out in our listening audience? What that car looks like? And
absolutely. Probably the closest thing to it is a Volkswagen Bug. If you can kind of imagine an early VW Bug, that's kind of what the vehicle itself, the car, looks like anyway. And it has an engine in the back, just like a VW did, but that engine drives the rear drivetrain of the car and also connects through a sprocket out the back of the car to a shaft that drives a propeller when the balance of the fuselage is attached to the back of the airplane. So it's kind of a conal-shaped fuselage, if you will, that attaches to the back of the airplane, runs back about 10 or 15 feet, and has a propeller on the end, and that pushes the airplane forward. And there are wings that are attached to the roof, at the roof line, pretty much, and there are attach points on the left side and the right side of the Bug, if you will, and you attach these wings, and the propeller shaft is connected at the back of the vehicle, and that forms the airplane. And when you're not using it, you detach the wings, and they fold up nicely adjacent to the propeller shaft, which is not really a shaft. Well, it is a shaft, but it has a aluminum kind of fuselage, if you will, around it. And you can tow that, although you wouldn't tow it down the highway, but you can tow it from, you know, one place to another, and then leave that segment of the aircraft there and drive around in the car.
It's just a great idea on paper. You know, it seemed like in the early 50s, our society felt like anything was technologically possible. Maybe you could tell us a few reasons why you think maybe it was built was prototypes.
Well, you know, I asked one of the guys who flies it down here once in a while, and I said, "What do you think of it?" And he said, "Well, it's not a very good car, and it's not a very good airplane." everything happens as an airplane. Everything happens at 80. It takes off at 80, it flies at 80, and it lands at 80. And it's got a pretty narrow kind of operating envelope, if you will, when it's functioning as an airplane. But as a car, it's perhaps a bit more practical. It's one of the first. It's a fiberglass fuselage, which was pretty revolutionary at that time. It's fairly lightweight, and you know, it functions pretty well as a car. I forget how many miles it has on it, but off the top of my head, I mean, I'm going to say something like, you know, 30,000 miles. So somebody's been driving it a bit, and it's got about 750 hours of flying time in the air. So that's pretty good time for something as kind of funky as that. But it was actually the only flying car to be what we call certificated. Some people use the word certified, but certificated by the FAA for production in what we call the standard category. That's non-experimental. So it has the same kind of basic kind of approval as, you know, a Cessna would have or something like that. So they demonstrated to the FAA with some degree of certainty that it was indeed a viable airplane. So it's pretty interesting.
Would you classify this as a car or a plane?
That's a good question. Depends on whether you've got the wings and the propeller portion attached or not. It's funny, when I first bought it, I wanted to get it insured, and I had to get both car insurance and airplane insurance. The insurance company asked me the same thing. Well, is it a car or is it an airplane? And I said, well, I guess that depends on what it's doing.
Now, how did you come across it in the first place? Somebody else, some private guy, had it as well?
Yes, it was owned by a fellow in northern Idaho who was kind of an eccentric and collected odd things. When I went to see the aero car, he actually had a steam railroad running around his place.
Oh,
so,
man.
The fellow was a guy who invented the cash machine, believe it or not. Diebold,
really?
I think, bought it from him. But you put your card in and you got money out. But anyway, he had it there as part of an amusement park that he was building, which included the train and Ferris wheels and rides and that sort of stuff. And he would take it up and fly it around on Saturdays to amuse the crowd. And it's pretty amusing. I mean, we've had, we have open house at the airport, and we've flown it before. We put an air horn in it, so when we fly over the crowd, we honk the horn. They hear it going beep, 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 and the crowd goes wild.
That's funny. Now, I understand it's up for sale.
Yes, that's right.
And it's $1.2 million. Do I have it right?
You have it right. And in fact, for you, we'll knock 20 or 30 grand off.
Oh, gee, that's really thoughtful, Greg. But have you had folks that have come up and they're serious yet about buying it, because it's a pretty good outlay?
Not really. It is a good outlay. And people say, well, do you think you're going to sell it? And I say, no. I'd love to, of course, but I have a couple of other airplanes that are going to cost quite a bit to restore. And when I first bought this airplane, I collect antique airplanes, and when I first bought this airplane, my taste hadn't been kind of refined, and it's like anything else that you get into. As you learn more about it, your tastes are more and more refined. So I like now 20s and 30s aircraft, and I have a number of those in the collection. And this is just kind of an oddball thing, and there are two airplanes that I would dearly like to restore, and I'd be lucky if I could get it done for the asking price of this one. But if somebody is interested, they could have it. And actually, there is another one of these that is for sale, but I think they want something like $2.5 million. Somebody said, "Well, do you think you can get you can get what you're asking for?" I said, "Well, I don't know, but if they call the other guys, I know where they can save $1 million right off the bat."
You got a bargain for them.
That's right.
There's no question about it.
Anyway, so, yeah, there were five of these built. One of them got in an accident on the road, and they combined it to restore the fourth one. So this is one of two that are flying. And the other is for sale but not flying, and there's one in a museum over at Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Hmm. So that's the five of these. And the prototype for his next generation flying car is in the Boeing Museum. So if you've ever been to Seattle and been in the Boeing Museum, it's a cute little red car sitting on the floor there, and that's the other one.
We're speaking with Greg Herrick, and Greg is the president of the Aviation Foundation of America. He's also owns a cute little car airplane that we've been talking about, the 1954 Aero. It seems like this is a good time maybe to talk a little bit, as you're looking at restoring a couple more vintage planes, your Golden Wings Flying Museum down in Blaine. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, frankly, with I collect vintage airplanes from the 20s and 30s, and the Golden Wings Flying Museum is what we call the facility at the Anoka County Airport in Blaine. It's just off of Interstate 35W. It is not a for-profit museum. It's not a non-profit museum. It's just a hangar with a bunch of old airplanes in it. But we do have events. We have open houses, and it's not like an 8-to-5 museum, because that would be expensive to maintain. There's no way to to support that, actually. But it's open to people who want to come and visit. If they call us, we let them in, look at the airplanes, or just show up at the airport and see if somebody's at the hangar and come on in. I just like to share the airplanes with people. I think part of owning old airplanes is sharing them in the stories and what have you. One of the other planes I have is the oldest flying metal airplane in the world, which is a Ford Trimotor built in 1927.
Wow.
And that gets a lot of attention. And we take the airplanes up to fly-ins and pancake breakfasts. I was just up in Malacca last weekend in a Stinson Trimotor, and it was the front page of the Malacca paper. It's fun because we just like to kind of drop in on these events. You know, airports have once in a while have these pancake breakfasts out at the airport, and they invite pilots to fly in, which they call fly-ins, if you're not familiar with that. But when you come in with one of these weird airplanes, you know, everybody goes nuts. Oh, what's that? It's just fun. It's fun to share them.
I was just thinking that it'd be great if you flew the old 1954 Aero car up here. Bob, my co-host, would love to ride in it.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, I don't know. We'll have to see. How much do you weigh, Bob?
170 pounds.
Oh, my God. It might be a pound or two too much.
Oh, I'll lose it. How many people can ride
in? Actually, it's a two-passenger airplane, and I'm going to be very frank with you guys. I have never even ridden in it myself.
I guess I don't blame you, Greg.
I've had the two guys that flew it is John Moore, who's a test pilot, aerobatic pilot here at based at the Doca County Airport in Blaine. He's flown it several times, and John is the guy who said, that's not a very good car, not a very good airplane. And the other guy who flew it is Joe Kinninger, who is a pre-astronaut and a test pilot from the 50s or 60s. And he's actually the fastest man alive, the guy that jumped out of a balloon at 68,000 feet or whatever it was and
gutsy.
Exceeded the speed of sound. But anyhow, he's flown it, and he loves it.
Huh.
I frankly, you know what? I'd rather fly a trimotor than that thing.
You know, there was another interesting thing that I learned on your website, and that had to do with your being instrumental in the Amelia flight, where you recreated Amelia Earhart's flight across the country and back again. Can you tell folks a little bit about both Amelia's trip and how you recreated it?
Well, I was contacted by a fellow in Australia who said, I have an airplane called an Avro Avian, and you should have it. And I said, well, okay, tell me about it. He said, well, yeah, the Avro Avian was an airplane that Amelia Earhart, not this very one, but this is the only one left. He said it was the same make and model that Amelia Earhart made her first record flight in the United States, and she flew from Rye, New York to Los Angeles and back, and he said, so you should have it and recreate that flight. So I was interested, so I flew to Australia and looked at the airplane, and I ended up buying it. And at the time, it was the oldest flying airplane in Australia, so I didn't endear myself to the Australian airplane crowd too much by taking it out of the country. But we brought it back here and had it repainted, and I got a woman who kind of looked like Amelia Earhart, and she dressed like Amelia Earhart. She flew this airplane along the same route that Amelia flew in 1927. And we landed at the same places, ate the same food, stayed in the same hotels when we could, and what have you. I was flying in a chase plane. And we had thousands of people show up at some of the stops. And we actually had, I think it was 8 or 9 people who had been there as children when Amelia came into their local airport on
wow.
their parents' shoulders, and they came out and remembered seeing Amelia the first time, and they signed the wing, and that was a big deal.
And that was in 2001, so those folks have been around a while.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They were older then. And then in 2003, we recreated the National Air Tours, and we took, I organized that, and we took 31 aircraft, vintage aircraft, on a 4,000-mile journey around the United States as part of the Centennial Flight Celebration. We had 93 people with us, and 31 or 32 airplanes and visited 27 cities and towns. And we were recreating a flight program that Ford Motor Company initially launched, and that to introduce America to the idea of transporting themselves by air, or themselves or the cargo. And they'd organize these tours, and they would go around the country. From 1925, they'd do one tour. The next year, they'd do another one a little bit bigger. And they were typically, at first, they'd cover four or five states. And the last one they did, they went all around the circumference of the United States. And I mean, they would fly into farm fields and everything, and people had never seen airplanes before. And it was kind of a contest. And that really did a lot to introduce people to the idea of air travel in the United States. And of course, when Lindbergh crossed the Atlantic, that was a huge kickoff too. But Ford was very involved in aviation from the early days. A lot of people don't realize that Ford was very, very instrumental in introducing us to commercial air travel in this country.
And when you recreated that national air tour, you did that all with vintage planes too.
Yes, that's correct. We had aircraft from the period of time the original tours were held, and a couple of the airplanes actually were on the original air tours. They were the very aircraft that were on the air tours. And if we couldn't find the very airplane, then we'd take airplanes that were of the same make and model. And then if we couldn't find that, we'd take airplanes that were from the same time period as the original tours. And if we couldn't find that, we'd take airplanes that were represented the progress of aviation. And then there were one or two airplanes I wanted to have come along, and those fell into a fifth category that were airplanes which, in the opinion of the aircraft selection committee, were appropriate.
Okay. I would think, I would think some of those, they got to be a real learning experience just to fly. I mean, there's not exactly any autopilot stuff going on.
No, they are absolutely right. I mean, it requires, some practice to learn to fly these older airplanes. But the fact is they were slower. They were built very stoutly, of course, because they didn't have all the engineering data to kind of push the envelope and get right to the edge. So they're very good. And part of doing these tours is to educate people and to let people see the airplanes. We took these 30-some airplanes, and we landed and opened the gates and let the crowds in. And kids were sitting in the cockpit and climbing over, and a lot of people don't understand that most of these airplanes are made of fabric. I mean, tubing and fabric. And believe it or not, they still make airplanes out of fabric, some small planes. But it was an educational experience for the participants, of course. They had a great time and learned a lot. And then for the public as well, we had, I think here at Anoka, this was one of our stops, and we had about 8,000 people at the airport.
Wow.
It was a remarkable experience, and I think everybody enjoyed it.
You know, we only have a couple minutes left here of airtime, but I wanted to ask you one more thing, and that's about your efforts to dig up the Sikorsky 39. Can you tell folks where that thing is and, why? You've been there four times, I think, to work on that. Tell us a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, that's to tell the whole story, which is kind of a tearjerker in a sense when you learn about the people that were involved in that airplane, but it would take a half an hour. But the long and short of it is that I was looking for one of these kinds of airplanes. I was unable to locate one, and I started calling around to people who had an airplane registered to them of this make and model, but I'd never seen one. And I ended up talking to a guy who said, yeah, I've got one. I said, well, great. I'd love to come and see it. And he said, well, you need to know something about it. And I said, what's that? And he said, it's at the bottom of a lake in Alaska. And that's how that thing started. Turns out, I said, well, what's it like to fly? And he said, I've never flown it. He said, I just have the salvage rights. I said, well, have you even seen the thing? And he said, no. I said, well, how do you know it's there? And he said, I'm not sure it is. but the guy I bought it from told me it was.
that's a wing and a prayer, isn't it?
So it was fun. So The bottom line is I signed a deal with him, and I said, look, we agreed on the price. It wasn't a lot of money because, obviously, we didn't have anything, but it's tangible. But I said, look, I'll make this deal with you. We'll agree on the price, and I won't have to pay you anything unless I find it. And if I find it, then you agree to sell it to me for our price. And I'll be honest with you. And I said, it doesn't mean I'm going to raise it to the surface, which at the time I thought was going to be a piece of cake. But I said, I'll pay you for it. So it turns out after a couple of extremely expensive efforts involving side scan, sonar, and so on, we found it. And I paid him the money for the airplane, and we tried to raise it, but it's a pretty good size 50-foot wingspan airplane, tipped over, two-thirds buried under 213 feet of water in a very remote lake in Alaska, and it's stuck in this glacial silt, this stuff that's like a clay mud glue combination, and it's really stuck. So we have to figure out a way to agitate the material and get the airplane out of there without tearing it apart, and that's kind of where we're at. But that's been going on for a decade.
Good luck with that one, Greg.
Well, thank you.
We've been speaking with Greg Herrick. He is the president of the Aviation Foundation of America. He also is the proud owner of a 1954 Aero car, which was one of our focuses here tonight. And Greg, if there's one, I know you have a number of websites people can look at, but is there one in particular that would lead people to all of your endeavors?
Well, there isn't one that would. If you Google my name, Greg Herrick, you'll find out more than I probably would like you to know. I'm just kidding. I don't plan to be in politics, so I don't care. Yeah. But you know, everything's great. But one site I would like to tell you about, and that's one called flyins.com, and we operate that. It's flyins.com, with or without a hyphen. And that will take you to aviation events that are occurring in the in your community or within a certain radius of your zip code. And that's a lot of fun to go to that site and see if there are any events occurring now as the summer is winding down. There are fewer and fewer, but get on that site and look. And I just encourage people to go out to their local airport if they have a pancake breakfast or an open house and enjoy it and learn about airplanes and take your kids out there. And the EAA chapters will... That's a chapter of aviation. People will take kids for rides for free to hopefully get them in a small airplane before they get in what we call a silver pig or a silver tuna and have to sit in the back but go up in a light plane for free. And we just want people to be involved in local aviation, and airports are there to be shared by the community.
Well, Greg, I want to thank you so much for giving us your time. I know how busy you are, and it was very gracious of you to join us, and we hope sometime in the future we may be able to call you again.
I hope you do. And come on down and see us. And thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to share a little bit about this airplane and flying with people.